The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hey, good afternoon and welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is Gino Geraci. I'm so glad you could join me on the program Crosswalk with Gino Geraci. It's a kind of a free-for-all Friday. And on free-for-all Friday, we usually talk about any number of things. And of course, there's a reason why we call the program Crosswalk. It really is the intersection of Christian faith and Christian living. This is where doctrine meets duty and belief meets behavior. This is the program where we hopefully try to have you in mind. And joining me on the program is Dr. Andrew, we'll call him Ike Shepherdson. He, along with my pal Doug Grotheis, have written a book called The Knowledge of God in the World and the Word. It's an introduction to classical apologetics. And I was able to snag one from Zondervan Academic, and I'm grateful to be able to have Dr. Shepherdson on the program. So, Ike, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Gino. Great to be here.
Well, I noticed that you got your PhD from the University of Toronto.
Yes, sir.
Now, was Jordan Peterson there?
You know, he was, but he wasn't quite as controversial yet while I was a student there, although some of the rumblings were just starting to happen while I was a student.
How interesting. How interesting, because I read his book, Maps of Meaning, which was his, I guess it was his textbook that he used at Harvard. And so I did a little bit of a deep dive because I was trying to figure out, what is his worldview? What are his deeply held beliefs? What does he believe about what's real, what's true? What does he believe about God? Is he a monist or is he a dualist and all of this other kind of stuff? But before we dive into that, The Knowledge of God in the World and the Word, you co-wrote this with Dr. Doug Grotheis. Talk a little bit about what prompted this project and what it was like working with Doug Grotheis.
Well, what prompted the project was really that there's a lack of materials written for the church on how to do apologetics in the world. There are a number of incredible philosophers of religion who are writing about apologetic issues. Think of William Lane Craig, J.P. Moreland, Gary Habermas. But a lot of their work is academic, and it should be, academic in nature. However, what we wanted to do with this book was to have something that was translatable for somebody in the pews, somebody in the chairs, somebody who maybe doesn't have an advanced degree in theology or philosophy, a questioner, somebody who's sincere about their faith but maybe hasn't had background training in this discipline before. This is a book for them.
So it's a practical primer.
Yes, sir.
And so it isn't just for graduate students. It's for regular people in the pew who want to know, how can I talk with people? So let's for the person who's listening, start off with a clear definition of what is apologetics, and specifically when you talk about classical apologetics, what is that?
Now, the apologetics is the art and science of defending and commending the Christian faith. Now, it's an art in that it sometimes is done in a very elegant way as you respond to somebody's questions around you, as you talk to people who don't have faith in Jesus. It's a way of helping them to see the beauty and truth of the Christian worldview. But it's a science as well, because it trades in arguments that God exists, arguments that Jesus is God revealed in the scriptures and in the world around us. And so that's apologetics in general, defending and commending the Christian faith as true, rational, and pertinent to every aspect of life. But classical apologetics trades on the idea that sometimes it's helpful to organize what we do in defending Christianity into two main categories. First, showing that God exists. When we show that God exists, we're not typically discussing how we know that the triune God exists. We're merely saying there is a God. And then secondarily, showing that Jesus is that God, that that the scriptures are true, and the story about Jesus as revealed in the scriptures is a true story. So those are the two categories of classical apologetics.
So for the book, The Knowledge of God in the World and the Word, it is, would you say that a high schooler could read it and benefit from it, or is this going to be a more college-oriented? Where would you put this book?
We wrote it for three audiences. The college freshman who's going to take one course in Christian apologetics.
And this is going to be that course.
The high school senior who's preparing for going to university or to trade school or wherever he or she might go. And then the average parishioner, somebody who isn't planning on getting a degree in apologetics, but they have people around them that they want to share the truth of Christianity with, and they want to be able to have some tools in their belt that can help them to show people that Christianity is true.
Now, do you think that, again, we were going to talk a little bit about, there's just so much I want to talk about, but let's first begin with the book, because, again, right on page four, it says, knowledge starts with revelation. Knowledge starts with revelation. And I couldn't help but thinking, again, the origins, the thought, you know, where does knowledge come from? How do we know if of anything? You know, we talk about the classic academic views of rationalism and irrationalism, Vantillian revelation, you know, where do we get information? Now, keeping it at the simplest level possible, you make an argument that the Bible is a reliable source of knowledge and information about this God who exists.
That's right. But it's not just that the Bible is a reliable source of revelation. That's important, incredibly important for those of us who believe that the Bible is true in every issue on which it speaks. But that God has spoken in other ways too. He's revealed himself in the world around us. And I think that's key because as Christians, we have a dog in this fight. There's no neutral knowledge. And sometimes apologetics is criticized because it attempts to make Christianity an issue of neutral belief, that somehow I could be presuppositionless or biasless in how I looked at information. But that's simply not the case. All of us have a background, a perspective that we come from. But as Christians, we believe that God has spoken. That's actually the key to all of our beliefs, is that God has revealed himself. It's perfectly within God's ability to remain silent, should God want to, but he hasn't wanted to, and he continues to speak.
So in your part one, you deal with the theological objections to apologetics and the philosophical objections to apologetics. Off, you know, we were talking a little bit, and you talked about your own emphasis, where what you believe God has hopefully uniquely called you, positioned you to do, is to once again bring apologetics as a practical tool for everyday Christian life. Do I dare use the word discipleship and living?
That's right. And in the book, we talk quite a bit about how apologetics is related to discipleship and also related to evangelism, of course. But I think one of the things that people get wrong about the discipline of apologetics is that somehow that's the discipline for people who are uniquely gifted in the church, for the nerds among us, let's say. I can say that as somebody, somebody who has a PhD, but it's also something for everybody. Everybody has questions. All Christians have legitimate questions about the truth of their faith. And the people that you care about who are outside of the Christian faith, they have questions too. And apologetics is there to help them to put their trust in Jesus.
Now, we know it's published by Zondervan Academic. In the few seconds we have in this segment, where's the how? What's the best place to go and get a copy?
Yeah, Amazon.com.
Just go to Amazon.com and just type in, well, The Knowledge of God in the World and the Word. It's an introduction to classical apologetics. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the book when we come back with Andrew Ike Shepherdson. This is Gino Geraci. I'll be right back. Hey, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Gino Geraci, my guest, Andrew Ike Shepherdson. We're talking about his book, The Knowledge of God in the World and the Word. It's an introduction to classical apologists. But I'm thinking about this on so many different levels, because in part two, you argue about God's existence and you appeal to the standard arguments, the cosmological argument, the ontological argument, the moral argument, the argument from design. These are arguments that have been talked about, written about, advocated, but aren't really well understood in mainstream evangelical Christianity.
I agree. I think there's a lack of training on what these classical arguments are, what they say, and how valuable they really are. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes there's an idea that arguments don't convince anybody. Mm-hmm. Well, depends what you mean by convince. Mm-hmm. Arguments certainly can remove objections, and they can show that Christianity is more plausible than not, or even just that theism is more plausible than not. Mm-hmm. And so arguments are really helpful, especially for the skeptic, for the questioner. And in my own journey, I would say that arguments are helpful in reminding me all of these experiences that I've had in my personal faith with Jesus, mm-hmm. they weren't false. I was experiencing a God who is there, as Francis Schaeffer would say, mm-hmm. the God who is there. These arguments help to confirm to the Christian that your faith is true and rational.
Yeah, and this is interesting to me from an evangelical or just from an evangelist standpoint, where you talk about the God who is there, but imagine now you're an unbeliever or a make-believer or, again, not a skeptic but a cynic. And Ike, the way I differentiate the skeptic and the cynic, the skeptic says, I don't believe you, but I am willing to be entertained by the evidence. The cynic says, you know what? I don't believe you, and there's no amount of evidence that you can marshal that's going to cause me to change my mind, because my position isn't an intellectual position. It is, well, it's an emotional issue that I'm holding on to, because I can't. It frightens me to think about a God of the Bible holding me accountable for my behavior.
I like that distinction between the skeptic and the cynic. I think it's helpful. I think sometimes it's difficult for us to know to whom we're talking.
Yeah.
But that said, all of the resources of Holy Spirit-empowered ministry mm-hmm. are available for the Christian, whether it's answering the questions of the genuine skeptic or reaching out with the very presence of the Spirit as you're filled with the Spirit to the cynic. All of us are, because we know Jesus, all of us who are followers of Jesus, we have his Spirit in us that can empower us for the right thing in the right moment. And apologetics is sympathetic with all of that. Sometimes you need to answer the question, and sometimes you need to sit and suffer with the person who's suffering. Sometimes you need to provide that line of evidence. And sometimes you need to be a good friend, showing the cynic that Christianity works when it's embodied in the life of the believer.
Now, you're about the same age as my children. And I want you to just go back in time for just a moment as a high schooler or as a young college freshman or sophomore. And fast forward to now. How has the world changed? And tell me about the role of classic apologetics in the here and the now. And again, I guess where I'm going with this is, and the malleable, the malleability, if you will, of both argument and conversation as you advocate for things that are true. Have you found yourself going back to certain things over and over again? Or have you now had to add a few more things to your tool chest?
Well, certainly always adding things to the tool chest. I think when I think back to my high school days, simply sharing a testimony of God's work in your life with somebody
was powerful.
And it certainly still is. And yet that doesn't seem as sufficient today as it was in the past. I think we have a rise of something that some scholars have called apatheism. That is, I'm apathetic to the idea of whether or not mm-hmm. God exists. Or even people who would go beyond being agnostics, let's say I don't know that God exists, to saying it's impossible
to know.
To know, atheists. It's impossible to know that God exists. I think that's a little bit more common today. I think what you also have with the rise of globalization, which was certainly a condition that I grew up under, mm-hmm. but is more intensified now, is this idea that, well, there are well-meaning people of all faith persuasions and of no faith. Who's to say who's right? Mm-hmm. So I'll throw up my hands and just say, you know, I want to be a good person. And of course, then you're begging the question of what good is. You know, what does it mean to be good? How would I know if I was being good? What's the source of goodness? And how can I recognize goodness in somebody else when I see it in myself, or if I see it in a moral exemplar, let's say? So I think the issue of globalization, or the rise of globalization, has made this a little bit more difficult in terms of apologetics. That said, I think the classical arguments are still strong here. Mm-hmm. I think there is a common sense in Western civilization that you should care for the wounded, that you should raise up the cause of the fatherless, that you should care about people who are suffering injustice, and these issues are the kinds of things that help us as apologists to find common ground with those who don't believe.
Yeah, this is so interesting to me because as I look back to about the 4th century, about 360 AD, there was a young man. He was in his 20s, and he had quite a Christian upbringing. And then by his mid-20s, he abandoned Christianity, and he became the emperor of Rome. His name he's been called in history Julian the Apostate. And Julian wanted to recapture paganism because he's coming out of this pagan worldview. And he sees that the supremacy, the authority, and the magnificence and the beauty of Rome is in the Roman worldview. So he is going to try to suppress Christianity, not like before, where there was crass Domitian or Diocletian-like persecutions. But he argued for the Christians that their compassion, they sort of monopolized the welfare system. And so he advocated for a pagan welfare system to capture compassion, because he thought that that was what was driving the hearts and souls of people. So he wants to hold on to paganism, but I think what he winds up is literally speeding up its demise, and then speeding up the ascendancy of Christianity. And I know that you talk to a lot of people and they bemoan the fact that they see Christianity is descending and paganism is now ascending. What do you see as the role of apologetics in the contemporary cultural circumstance we find ourselves in?
Typically, when somebody will speak to me that way, while I'm obviously an American, I'm here in this culture, I love our culture, I would say look to the global south first. Mm-hmm. Christianity is not in descent. God will have a church, and we don't need to be afraid about whether or not the church will survive or die. The Holy Spirit is the same Spirit today as he's always been, mm-hmm. and God is still on the move. That said, we're right to wonder and be concerned about the decline of the church in America, and I think apologetics plays an important role for how we establish the intellectual credibility of Christianity in whatever America will become, but also as we do evangelism to those around us. People are not, in my estimation, going to be drawn to large-scale events like Billy Graham Crusades, like the ones where my dad was saved mm-hmm. at a Billy Graham uh-huh. Crusade. They may still have those kinds of things, and perhaps they'll be successful in various ways. But most people who will come to confess faith in Jesus will do so because a Christian listened to them, mm-hmm. answered their questions, was willing to admit their ignorance when there was mm-hmm. ignorance, and lived a life that shows that Jesus is the Lord just by how they act every day. apologetics is an important piece of this. It means that the average, everyday Christian has to be equipped to defend and commend the Christian faith as true and rational.
My guest is Andrew Ike Shepherdson. He, along with Doug Groteis, has written a book, The Knowledge of God in the World and the Word. It's an introduction to classical apologetics. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this as a resource. But I'm also going to ask Dr. Shepherdson about his role at Colorado Christian University. And, well, if you're listening right now and you would like to think of yourself as a lifelong learner, maybe that we could point you to some other resources as well. This is Gina Tracy. I'll be right back. Hey, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's great to get to know Dr. Andrew Ike Shepherdson. He, along with my pal Doug Groteis, have written a book called The Knowledge of God in the World and the Words, an Introduction of Classical Apologetics. And Ike, what you're doing right now, you are involved in the BA and MA programs in applied apologetics at CCU, and it says, and is affiliated faculty at Denver Seminary and Life Pacific University. Talk a little bit about what you're doing right now in education, if you will, higher education. Talk a little bit about your role in imparting this information to lifelong learners. Again, off the air, you were telling me that your typical student isn't 18 years old, 19 years old. Your typical student is a person who's been out in the, dare I use the word, real world. They've had a real job. They've lived a real life. But they come back, they see the value of these tools because they want to be effective evangelists, witnesses of Jesus Christ, engaging the popular culture with the claims of Christianity.
Yeah, that's right. Our programs at CCU, Colorado Christian University, are in applied apologetics. And you're right, it's for working adults. Most of my students are in business, they're in law, medicine, a lot of former military and law enforcement. And what I see as a common theme is they're looking at the people around them and thinking, how can I help them to see that Christianity is true? Mm-hmm. How can I equip my kids to defend the faith? How can I serve in my church to lead a Bible study to defend the faith and show other people that Christianity is true? How can I answer the questions of my skeptical coworkers and friends and neighbors? And that's what the programs are really designed for at Colorado Christian, for that the person who's in regular life wanting to talk about the truth of the Christian faith.
Now, since 2019 and 2020 and COVID, obviously, you've been a part of the greater culture as well. Do you see a shift in the way things are unfolding, how education is taking place, how people are learning, and then what they're literally looking for to be able to participate in the larger culture?
I think I have, and this is really just capitalizing on a technology that was here all along, YouTube. Where when people are learning, they're watching videos on things. This is how I heard of Jordan Peterson, somebody of mutual interest to us, was watching YouTube videos where he would speak. I think that for a lot of people, they're getting their information more and more from YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, where they're learning by watching these videos as opposed to picking up a book, as opposed to listening to book recommendations. This is where they're getting their information now. Now, the problem with that is that a lot of information on these kinds of channels are short form. They're not built to help you to focus or to study or to really understand a concept, but they give you more soundbite style information. I think our friend Doug would call that, infotainment.
Sure.
It's not necessarily built to, one, make you a better disciple or to even particularly help you to understand an issue, but maybe give you some kind of 30-second soundbite that you could give on any number of topics.
And obviously there was a time when logic, reason, evidence, persuasion seemed to be helpful. But now you're living in a world where people see logic, reason, evidence, and persuasion as ideological tools of oppression. How do you survive in a climate like that?
That certainly is the case with a number of elements in our culture. I would suggest that there are plenty of people for whom logic and persuasion and evidence
remain
are still incredibly important. Yeah, I speak at the Colorado School of Mines a couple times a year with their Ratio Christi group. And these are students who are becoming engineers and computer scientists. And for them, the facts are what matter.
Uh-huh.
However, for plenty of people in our culture, who is describing the facts matters more than the facts themselves. For example, your listeners may recognize this, but they can't see me. I'm a white man.
Mm-hmm.
And for some people, that may make whatever I have to say be that much less important or maybe that much more suspicious. That is, I'm using truth claims to try to manipulate you. I'm using evidence and logic to try to
oppress you,
to try to oppress you, or to put you into my patriarchal worldview. And I would say this is where, you know, facts, they don't have a color or a gender. You know, they don't have a background. Facts are facts, regardless of who is saying them and defending them. And so it doesn't matter too much whether or not I'm a man or a woman, I'm black or white. If I'm saying what's true, you should care about it. And if it's falsehood, you should reject it.
Yeah. It just reminds me of part three. You know, you talk about the Christian story being true in this last part. You're connecting the dots and the trustworthiness and the truth. Now, this brings up, again, a mutual interest in Jordan Peterson and the popular culture, where there seems to be a growing sense that the ideological social justice, the amoral little t truth, that truth is relative, can't sustain a coherent worldview. In other words, it doesn't really work in real life. In real life, there is absolutes. In real life, catches up with you. Has it been your experience that there's a reason? How would you explain Jordan Peterson's popularity? And I think maybe part of the explanation is people want truth and even absolute truth and a coherent worldview, but they're not ready for Jesus and repenting of their sin, but they know that this isn't working.
Yeah. One thing I think is wonderful about what Jordan Peterson does is that he shows that the practicality of truth really matters. Now, Jordan Peterson, he's ultimately a pragmatist with respect to truth. For him, if you ask him the question whether or not God exists, mm-hmm. he'll say that the idea that God exists is true enough. Mm-hmm. That is, it works, and it makes sense of a lot of things. However, the question of whether or not there is an actual being who is distinct from the creation, who has always existed, that we could reasonably call God, he is more or less
agnostic,
uninterested in that question.
Yeah. Agnostic maybe is too strong of a word. And when you use that term, uninterested, but to me, in order for a worldview to be robust, it has to be coherent. You still have to have an explanation of suffering. You still have to have an explanation of what's gone wrong in the world. And it seems to me that both Jordan Peterson and people who love him understand and even recognize, hey, something's gone wrong in the world. Jordan Peterson entertained the notion that perhaps early on in his career that Christianity might not be a solution to the problem of suffering, but rather the source of suffering. And then he shifts. He shifts and begins to think that no, totalitarian evil socialist totalitarianism has killed more the impulse towards totalitarianism has killed more people and caused more suffering, unimaginable suffering. But it's still not an explanation of where it came from, why it's here, and how to solve it.
That's right. For the person who's uninterested in the truth question, the fact that we're simply suffering is more or less meaningless. But Jordan Peterson, of course, is interested in the truth question. He's wondering about where this comes from. And suffering.
And he seems to be really interested in the subject of suffering.
Yeah. Yeah, that's because he's a student of Alexander Solzhenitsyn. And it was through Peterson that I picked up the Gulag Archipelago for the first time.
Oh, yeah, 1974, yeah. Pulitzer Prize.
Yeah, and I think what you have is you show how common and awful suffering and evil is. and how easy it is for it to seep into the culture where we simply accept our own suffering and oppression as being, well, this is just how the world works. That's what suffering will do to you. It can desensitize you to the fact that things weren't meant to be this way. And yet this is an incredible thing that apologetics can do, is it can show people your distaste for suffering, your anger at evil in the world. There's a reason that that exists. Mm-hmm. Don't move past that question and start to focus on why would you be so offended at the idea of evil? And it's because you have in your heart a longing and a desire for goodness and truth.
Exactly. Because, again, the presence of suffering still calls to ask and answer the question, is there anything good? Is there anything good? And this is where it seems to me we build little bridges to the gospel, to the person of Jesus, and this incredible reoccurring, what I'm going to use the term problem, the problem of Jesus. How do I explain his existence? What he said, what he did. How do I explain the fact that he died and came back to life? Okay, we'll be right back. Hey, welcome back. I've had a wonderful conversation with Dr. Andrew Ike Shepherdson. He, along with our pal Douglas Groteis, has written a book, The Knowledge of God in the World and the Word, An Introduction to Classical Apologetics. It must have been a wonderful, fun thing to do. Now, again, was this sort of like a relay? Was this a tag team chapter? Or how did you guys actually – it seems to me pretty complicated to have two authors writing one book.
It is in some ways. Of course, we had to set the agenda. What are we going to write about? And most importantly, what are we not going to write about?
Right.
There are so many issues.
Yeah, what do I leave out?
Right, yeah. But we wanted to distill this down to the most important things that Christians who are living their everyday lives can bring as lines of evidence to share with their unbelieving friends and to strengthen those within the church. We did pass the torch from chapter to chapter. You'll see a little bit of that in you know, I took the lead on some chapters, he took the lead on others. But we always spoke into our preparation process and then, of course, the final draft. And we share a pretty common passion for this, and a lot of this is due to the fact that Doug is my most important intellectual mentor. I was his student at Denver Seminary, and he's continued to be, of course, my friend, but an important intellectual mentor in my life. And so we do share some common perspective.
Yeah, he had a huge influence on me in the 1970s. In the early 80s, he wrote a book about the New Age and unmasking the New Age. And so there's never been a time in his life where he didn't have a passion for evangelism. It wasn't just philosophy and apologetics, some sort of dry intellectual engagement. There was always a person that he is thinking about, or a group that he's thinking about to bring the gospel to. And so I guess, again, in the world in which we live right now, what are some of the strategies that you can begin to come up with where you go, okay, these are the people I'm coming in contact with. I'm coming in contact with unbelievers in this situation. You know, you might be living in an academic bubble where your interactions are limited or whatever, but what are some of the things that you do to be able to turn the conversation to the things that matter most?
The most important thing that anybody can do to be an apologist in your everyday life is to know Jesus more mm-hmm. and more. The more that you look at how Jesus lived his life, you see that he was always ready to enter into a serious conversation about what mattered most. Mm-hmm. He was willing to have fun, to rest, to retreat and relax, but of course, ready to speak the truth in love. And so as you disciple yourself to Jesus, you learn that it becomes second nature mm-hmm. to have these kinds of conversations. And what you do is you look for the need in somebody's life. You mm-hmm. see this back. Francis Schaeffer used to write about this in his book, The God Who Is There. He wrote about how you want to find the place in somebody's life where there's a bit of tension or where there's an unresolved issue or question, and use that as a place to share hope with them. You're not exploiting them. You're helping to show that their need actually has a way to be satisfied. And I'll give you an example. I have a coworker. I work in the tech industry as well.
Oh, okay.
And I have a coworker who's a Muslim. And when I started a new job, I had a sit down with this coworker to learn about some aspects of our organization, and she shared with me that she was a little bit upset that day. Her brother had passed away recently. And because I know the scriptures and I know Jesus, I knew that in that moment I needed to share a word of hope with her. Mm-hmm. Even though, of course, in a workplace it may seem inappropriate to talk about the Bible, especially with a coworker who's a Muslim, it may seem inappropriate to talk about the Bible, and especially with a Muslim woman, mm-hmm. it may feel that way as well. But I had a sense that the Holy Spirit was telling me, remind her of the story of Hagar.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Muslims revere Hagar as a hero of the faith. They look at her as a Muslim. And I said, I have a sense, and this may sound crazy, is what I told her, mm-hmm. but I have a sense that God is saying that he is the God who sees you, which is what Hagar called God, the God who sees me.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately her eyes filled with tears. Mm-hmm. She said, thank you so much for sharing that with me. And that cost me nothing. Now, it may have caused some problems with HR. It didn't in my case, mm-hmm. but it cost me nothing to share a word of hope with her. And as you read the scriptures and you disciple yourself to Jesus, you'll learn that those kinds of things just start to come out of you, empowered by the Holy Spirit. And apologetic arguments can do the same thing. They can just come out of you at the right time. And this is one thing I love about our friend Doug's work, is that Doug talks about apologetics like they're jazz.
Right.
That a little bit of music will just come out at the right time. A certain chop that you've been working on, as the jazz right. musicians say, will just come out at the right time. And it'll become second nature to share these bits of evidence and truth with others.
Now, in the little bit of time that we have left, since you're working in the tech industry, just some thoughts on artificial intelligence, the role of technology in Christian discipleship. I had Bob Pritchett on the program last week. He is the founder and director of Logos. He invented Logos Bible software, which is something I use every single day. And then I've been playing around with ChatGPT. What are your thoughts on the role that technology is going to play in the now and in the not too distant future?
Well, I'll start with a caution first about this. And this may seem overly obvious, but parents who are listening should be thinking about this. This is an issue of discipleship with your kids, mm-hmm. that they can't use AI to write their papers. And that mm-hmm. may seem easy and obvious, but it's an issue of intellectual integrity. You can't pass off an AI's work as your own. Mm-hmm. My wife is a teacher at Valor Christian High School here in Colorado, and she has students who've turned in essays written off of ChatGPT. And thankfully, there's software to detect these things. But it is an issue of intellectual integrity. Mm-hmm. And as Christians, we need to be people who are integrous in everything that we do. And sometimes we excuse ourselves because of the pragmatic value of things like AI technology to say, well, who is it hurting?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not ripping off somebody else's work. There's not a person who's suffering here. So what's the harm? Well, the harm is actually to your own soul in ripping off an AI's work as your own. Now, that's the caution. And again, it may seem obvious, but it's an important conversation that parents should be mm-hmm. having with their kids. But from the perspective of a Christian who's looking at how fast the world is changing, ChatGPT is actually a great resource. Mm-hmm. If you don't know the answer to a question, type it into ChatGPT, and you'll at least get some kind of entry into understanding what people are saying about the issue.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody's asking you about, let's say, the resurrection of Jesus, mm-hmm. is it possible for a dead man to rise? It may give you some valuable places to start your own research, some authors that you should read. I mean, really, what it is it's just aggregating data that's out on the World Wide Web into an easy-to-read format. That's all it's really doing.
Yeah, I was thinking about this when I did a couple of conferences with Warren Wiersbe, who is a wonderful Bible teacher. And I love him, and he made Bible teaching very, very simple for most of us. And I remember he said, we all milk the same cow, but it's up to each one of us to make our own butter. It was his way of saying we're all using the Bible. We all borrow from one another, but it really is important that you bring something of yourself to what's being said. And again, I as I was contemplating artificial intelligence, ChatGPT, you probably know I'm on the board of directors of gotquestions.org, which is the largest Bible answer ministry in the world. And we were talking about some of the challenges that we face. And one of the challenges, again, is as you prayerfully reflect the presence of the Holy Spirit in the activity that you're doing, and that there really is no substitute for the presence of Jesus in the conversation.
And that is something that we can bring uniquely as followers of Jesus. Everywhere that you go, every person that you talk to, the Holy Spirit is there bearing witness to the deity of Jesus Christ.
Dr. Andrew Ike Shepherdson, the book, The Knowledge of God in the World and the Word. You can find it at Amazon. It's published by Zondervan Academic. Thanks for a great conversation.
Thank you.
This is Gino Geraci. I'll be back taking your calls, answering your questions.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.